Hey guys, it's Malls. Thanks so much for listening to Please Advise. Just a quick message before the show. Don't forget to subscribe in iTunes. It's super helpful for us and super helpful for you. You can also call 323-450-7408 to get your calls on the show. Again, 323-450-7408. Or email askpleaseadvise@gmail.com with your voice notes or emails. Thanks so much. Hey guys, it's Malls. Welcome to episode 124 of Please Advise. How are you, Christina?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm hungry. I'll explain more later. Today's guest is someone that you guys probably know because I've been a fan of hers for a long time and I literally don't know any. My head is so far up my own ass. I don't know anything. Her name is Jolie Kerr and we're just meeting for the very first time today, which I'm so excited about. You used to write a column on The Owl, which has now been a book, and also now you're an Esquire,
yes,
and you were on Deadspin for a while.
Yeah.
Ask a clean person.
That's right. Ask a clean person. I'm the clean person.
Will you clean my house?
I will clean your house.
No, you don't have to do that. I was afraid you. I really wanted you to be like, no, I don't clean people's houses.
I really like cleaning, and my house is very clean, so I don't have a lot to clean.
Yeah, that's probably true. Yeah.
Dude, I love an organizing project.
Oh.
And I have nothing left in my life to organize. Everything is organized within an inch of its life. So
I'm trying really hard. I've been throwing things away. Like my cousin came out here and I'll politely say that my place was not in the form that it was when I before she came here. And we tried to unpack my entire garage in like a week. Which normally, like, I can go into white tornado mode. I wasn't even really working that week anyway, because it was like, if I have two 28-year-old girls hanging out at my house, like, there's just not going to be
a lot of work getting done.
Especially, this is my office, so, like, they were sleeping in here. So I was not getting much done, and I was like, today, this is the week. I'm just going to, like, completely. By the way, I just noticed your iPhone doesn't have a case on it, and I'm sorry to completely derail.
No, it does.
But
oh, it's a clear case.
Oh my god,
it's a fern case.
I was like, what is wrong with her? She is very confident. Okay,
no. I had mine without a case for a long time.
I know, which is insanity to me. Like that is such a confident move that I literally, I'm like, who are you? You're either a millionaire or you are the most self-controlled, never get drunk, never do anything person.
Oh no, that's not
that
me.
That sounds about right.
That's like who has a no case, you know, or Kylie Jenner. But you guys, I was going to say to you that my place was not in the condition. I tried to do too much too quickly. I wound up throwing out a bunch of stuff. I'm still like, I'm looking around being like, why do I need stickers for my friends' bands? Like, why do I need stuff like that? Do I need that?
You don't need it, but if you like it, then it's okay to keep it. I think people are really hard on themselves about like this notion that they shouldn't have things or they shouldn't want things or need things. And I kind of blame Marie Kondo for a lot of that.
What's that?
I like to blame
it's the Marie. Art of tidying up.
Oh, yeah.
Does this spark joy?
Yeah.
And you know, the thing is that it helps a lot of people and I don't want to take away from that.
Right.
But it puts a lot of pressure on people to sort of do this massive clean out all in one and be, you know, incredibly rigid about it. And I just don't think that's like a realistic way to live life. And I don't think it's necessary.
Yeah.
And I partly say that because, you know, my column is an advice column. So people email me their questions.
Right.
And in their questions, there's always this pathos of being so cruel to themselves and so hard on themselves. And I just want to say, please be nicer to yourself.
Yeah.
Please.
We say that a lot here too.
I'll help you fix this problem. But also, I'm going to tell you that you're being way too hard on yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah, I bet.
You know, people like it is. It's hard. People beat you up or beat themselves up. Like, I mean, I'm here. I haven't been able to watch Hoarders ever because it makes me physically sick. Not because I'm like, oh, that's so gross. It's because I could be that. Like, I'm teetering on the edge of being a hoarder at any given moment.
Yeah.
And like this earring, for example. Now, you probably wouldn't know this is an earring, but it's a wooden cat and there's a small piece of metal. But this is one of a pair of earrings that I bought myself when I was 9 years old.
Did you by any chance get this at one of the stores in the garage in Harvard Square?
I think I probably did. And that's the other crazy thing is that we're from basically – so she grew up on Marlboro Street in Boston where I went to school for a year at Newman Prep. Then my mom moved me to New Jersey for the summer. And then I wound up just wanting to go back to public school in Lexington, which are great schools anyway. But – it's like wild that like, because, you know, when people talk about the Back Bay.
Newman Prep is a block and a half from where I grew up.
I know. Yeah. And by the way, like when people talk about the Back Bay, everyone forgets about Marlboro Street, which is like, I think, I mean, that's the nicest.
It's the quietest street.
Yeah. It's like definitely the one to grow up on. Yeah. I had a teacher who lived on Newbury Street and I like had no, I didn't realize until maybe 5 years ago that her parents must have just been from extreme wealth.
Yeah.
Because there's no way she was having a private school teacher's salary.
Definitely
and renting like a sick ass apartment that was on.
Yeah.
She, I mean, her apartment was on the goddamn news for being a nice apartment.
Wow.
So
I wouldn't want to live on Newbury Street though, because it's like living in a mall.
Yeah, it is. It is. I wouldn't want that either, but I thought it was very chic. But anyway, so this earring, I've been holding on to it for, I guess, I don't know, I'm 33, whatever the math of that is. I guess I lost the other one sometime in high school. So I just can't get rid of this. And I don't know if my goal is to take that super glue right there and glue it to a vase or like, I don't know what I'm doing with this thing, but this is one of these things that I look at. It's like, this is representative of my mental illness to me.
That
I have this fucking cat sitting around.
I don't know. I understand the emotional attachment to things because I do the same thing too. Like I still have ticket stubs of something like I went to a movie. Like when we went to see In the Heights, I still have that ticket stub.
Ticket stubs, I think.
Yeah. I finally got rid of some. I had some ticket stubs in my wallet and I was like, why do I have these in here?
Yeah.
I threw them away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Receipts. I've never used one. I've never used.
Oh, I don't
a receipt.
Keep receipts. I'm like.
I don't return.
I'm like, don't give me. Don't. I'm like preemptively tell them not to get because like I don't need it.
Why is just.
You know what I would do with that cat actually?
What?
I would buy a little magnet and I would super glue the magnet on and I would just make a fridge magnet.
And you know what?
It's perfect magnet size.
You're a genius because I just found a magnet downstairs that I don't have anything.
And we
to
already
stick
solved
it to.
A problem.
This is, I mean, the only problem.
Efficient. You're so efficient. We're not even like 5 minutes into the podcast and you already solved one of the problems.
I've been an advice columnist for almost 6 years now. I think I've got it down pretty well.
The magnet will go on the Please Advise Hall of Fame because my refrigerator doesn't take magnets.
Oh.
I got one of those.
Oh.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah.
It's a clear front, which is another bold move I made.
Wait, do you have a Yolanda Foster fridge?
Yeah, you just saw it, girl. That's where I just wasn't focusing on it. No, I mean, I also have a bunch of plants and shit down there, but like at the same time, no, I got a clear front fridge.
Oh my God. On my way out, I'm going to go admire it.
Not because of YOLO, but because, and normally my fridge is very, very organized, but I didn't do it because of Yolanda Foster. I did it because my mom grew up a house cleaner, but B, working in a lot of commercial kitchens as a waitress and then later running her own catering business.
Mm-hmm.
And commercial refrigerators are just the best refrigerators.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, I want a big, nice commercial fridge. And
I'm
they were
so
also
jealous.
About $1,000 less than a regular fridge because they're just, they're meant
for big ass kitchens. Yeah.
So I was like, when I first got it, I was like, this is really good because one, I think it'll help me with some of my weirder eating habits where it's just like I have no secrets with that fridge. Like there's nothing that's like I can't have leftovers in there for a week because I have trash bags in my visibly in my refrigerator. So that was really helpful for me. But I've tried to start setting myself up to do things that it's like if you don't keep this tidy, you're going to look like a ridiculous person. But I just don't know where to put – like, I need to put another shelf in my bathroom. It looks like – I always call it, like, Whitney Houston's crack den. Like, do you remember when they released those pictures to the National Enquirer? There was just, like, crack pipes, like, smashed into the – and then, like, candy and what –
It was horrifying.
And that's what I feel like my bathroom looks like all the time. And because I need to put another cabinet in, but I don't know where it goes. And it's tile, so I don't know where to – how to drill into the tile. It's just a whole thing. And
do you
have a drill?
Really,
well, no, I would have to hire someone to do that.
Okay. Because the way you do it is you just have to get a special bit, drill bit.
Yeah.
For tile.
Okay.
They basically have drill bits for every possible material you could ever want to drill into, like brick, glass, tile, blah, blah, blah.
So what do you
think? But you could easily hire. You can hire a thumbtack or a TaskRabbit someone to do that.
I'm huge on TaskRabbit because one of the things that my mom was really – has been kind to me about this actually, but she said to me like I didn't Like, you've never been a cleaner. Like, you're not – you've never been a person that likes to clean. She's like, I don't see that changing for you. She's like, you should have a cleaning lady. If you can afford it, you should have a cleaning lady come as frequently as possible. Yeah,
that's really good advice. And I totally, totally agree with that. I think also the idea of hiring someone is another place where a lot of people have a hard time allowing themselves to do that. And so whenever people ask me questions like – Is it okay if I literally get this all the time. People, is it okay if I hire a house cleaner? And I'm like, yes.
It's okay if you give a person who needs a job in America a job.
I was like, it's a job.
Yeah. That's true. I never thought about it. I always like felt slightly uncomfortable because I'm like hiring maybe another Hispanic woman to clean my house.
Her family's gonna eat too.
I know.
You know, and this is the thing.
And the thing I say, and I'm, this isn't directed at you, but what I try to say to people is like, sometimes when that's the attitude that you have about it, actually, you're the one being the jerk because you're kind of being condescending about a job that's completely legit.
Like my mom raised, I grew up with a white Irish Catholic mother who scrubbed toilets for a living. Like, it's not just, I mean, in this part of the country, yes, it's more likely that you are going to get a Hispanic person to clean your house.
Right, but where we're from, it's, you know.
It could be anyone.
It's Irish and Portuguese or the ones
like I
who are.
Russian.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean.
I should know how to clean my house better.
Your house is spotless. I don't know what you're talking about. I do say
that people should know how to clean.
Yeah.
Just like I think people should know how to cook. Even if you don't do it, there will always be some time in your life where you need to have that skill.
Yeah.
And you can always outsource it.
Yeah.
You know, you can throw money at the problem and there's no shame in that.
Yeah.
But there is shame in not knowing at all.
Yeah.
You know, just being totally helpless.
That's true. I worked with someone who said once, she said, you know, when I was in college, I called my parents and I was having a meltdown because I didn't know how to do anything. And she said that her parents' response to that was, we didn't raise you to be the type of person who has to clean their house. It's okay. It's okay. And I had an emotional reaction to it. I started crying because I was like, that is just like the most privileged fucking shit I have ever heard in my life. And I mean, was like,
I'm telling you, I grew up quite privileged.
Yeah.
And I mean, you just saw my reaction, right? I gasped audibly and my jaw was just dropped. Like,
especially because
that
like,
attitude is something that was like never part of, even though I grew up so privileged, like never part of my house. And I find it kind of disgusting.
I find it also just really sad. I do too.
Because it's not that girl's fault.
Absolutely not.
You know?
Absolutely
not. And her parents
not.
Are doing her a disservice by, you know.
It's 11 layers of offensive because it's like, one, there's a type of person that should have to know how to clean their house.
Yeah.
You know, and that was one of the things that really bothered me too. Just like, you're in college. Like, this is about like, yeah, you should learn how to do your fucking laundry in college. Yeah. Like, that doesn't that's something that every human, even if you leave college and start making, you know, $70,000 a year at your first job, whatever weird scenario that is. Let's say that happens. Like, you should still know how to do your laundry. Yeah. I'm totally in agreement with you about that.
Like, still drop it off all the time, but just knowing how to wash your underpants when your underpants need to be washed.
Yes.
And there's no one else around to do it for you. It's like a basic life skill.
Now, this is one thing that's interesting because you probably run into a lot of people who are like this too. I have weird things that I'm very clean about.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
I hand wash all of my underwear in the sink. A yoga pant has never hit a dryer in this house. Bra has never hit a dryer in this house. I wash by fat. Like, I'm very, like, but at the same time, I'll do my laundry and then I'll just, like, throw it in a pile on the floor. And I'll be like, I'll pick from my pile of impeccably clean laundry this week. It's really crazy. It's like.
Here is a thing that might help with that.
Okay.
It may not, but I often tell people that part of laundry is putting the clean laundry away.
No. No.
I struggle with that.
No.
Because people do struggle with it. And when I
end up leaving it in the hamper and then my dirty clothes go on the floor and then I just swap them out when they
Oh, I have some help for that one too. but when I say to people, think of the putting away as being part of the entire endeavor, it changes for them the attitude that they have about putting stuff away because they don't see it as like a separate chore. It's all part of one operation.
Yes.
That starts with gathering up the dirty laundry and ends with putting the clean folded clothes away.
Yeah.
That's the whole operation. Now for you, I have another tip. Okay. If you're not, because I know that's still a lot to ask.
Sadly.
I love this idea. Get two laundry hampers.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And one is for your dirties. And then they go down to your laundromat or your laundry room or wherever you're doing your laundry. So I'm such a New Yorker right there. Yeah. So the laundromat.
Most of us have laundromats here. I didn't have a laundry machine until very recently.
Okay.
And it's a luxury.
Yeah. So you take your clothes, you do the wash, you clean them, they're back in the hamper, but there's still an empty one there.
Oh, that's smart.
And so you can just leave all the clean stuff in one and start filling the other one up with dirty stuff. And then you just constantly have...
That's actually really smart.
Isn't that a great idea?
Yeah, that's actually a really great idea. Because that's my biggest problem is I have clothes strewn all over the floor. And sometimes I don't know which ones are clean or which ones are dirty.
Right.
I'm like showing my hand right now.
That's what I'm going to show your hand. Show your hand. Well, I'll also tell you, I have that effect on people.
Welcome to the program, Christina.
People like to tell me stuff. Like, I don't know what it is about me, but like strangers open up to me. On the subway, someone would be like telling me their life story, and I'm like, okay, well, this is my stop. It was nice talking to you. But yeah, I always suggest that one because to me, the thing I would like people to not do is throwing the dirty underpants on the floor. Like if there's one thing I can ask, you know, that's kind of the ask that I make of people. I'm like, just don't put your dirty underpants on the floor. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You can put them in. It's just as easy to drop them on the floor as to drop them in a hamper. As long as you have a hamper in which to drop them. And so we've solved that problem.
Okay. I think when I was a single wild animal, I mean, I'm still single, but when I was wild and a wild animal living in an apartment, I think that I had underwear everywhere. I'm pretty sure I had underwear everywhere. But, okay, this is my thing. I'm washing my clothes too much, and I've recently figured that out. When I was a kid, you would wear your jeans like four times before you – like in a row.
Yeah.
And then you'd wash them.
Yeah.
I'm doing it every other time. And with shirts, if I wear something for 10 minutes, I wash it. That is so stupid.
I'm the same way, and I'm trying to break the habit too.
Because – it's you're really like, unless you're excessively like sweating on your clothes or you've been in them all day.
Yeah, or like you're out doing yard work.
Exactly. I mean, they're not dirty.
So I don't know if this only applies to like high end jeans, but apparently you're not supposed to wash them.
Oh, no, it's a myth. It's a myth.
No.
It's a myth.
I had a friend who told me that, like, she's like, yeah, I never wash my jeans. They just like once every few weeks, like, I'll just like Febreze the crotch. And I was like, If you're Febrezing a crotch, your life is out of – I know. Febreze is the tool of a very weak person.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
You've given up on life if you're Febrezing the crotch. See, the thing is, though, is actually – I don't mind using an odor-eliminating product on the crotch of your jeans, but that is not what Febreze is.
No. What is – it's for college boys, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's to get the weed smell out of your dorm room.
It's like a post-cleaning, like, zhuzh.
An in-between – it's a – you know, like, in between your regular cleanings, like, if the dog has been lying on the couch.
Okay.
You know.
You might Febreze the couch.
Which I say that because we were literally – I'm staying with my best friend while I'm here, and we cleaned his couch today. We got out the, like, full upholstery cleaning machine. Did the whole thing.
I saw something unique once that has never occurred to me as a person in general in life, but then shocked me. And then I also was like, maybe that's not a bad idea. I went on a road trip with someone. And, like, I was very vigilant. Like, 5 items of clothing each.
Oh, wow.
The rest of the car – I'm packing my juices, my probiotics, and 90% of this road trip is just about me not getting fat while we're eating shitty food for 8 days.
Yeah, road trip.
So, 5 pieces of clothing each. Day probably 4 or 5, we're at my family's house in Texas and my aunt's house in Texas. I'm on the phone, and I look over, and I see the person I was on the road trip with just using a degree deodorant spray bottle and spraying down the pits of her sweater. And I was like, that's low-key a genius move, but that would have never occurred to me to apply deodorant directly to the inside of a sweater. But then again, what was she going to do? Dry cleaning in Mansfield, Texas on a holiday weekend? I don't think you'd get your shirt back for 2 weeks.
True.
So, I mean, I also, like, I wasn't completely offended by that because at least it's not for breezing the crotch.
Yeah, no, no, no. I'm not offended by it. I'm distressed because it's so bad for the fibers of a sweater.
Yeah, yeah,
because
yeah.
Because deodorant is like, it's such a like sticky, waxy, weird substance.
Totally.
And it's also very stainy itself, like mm-hmm. not just like
residue.
you have the white skid mark effect, but right. also there's a reaction that happens between your perspiration and the aluminum
yes
in the deodorant mm-hmm. not in the antiperspirant but in the deodorant part of it that has a chemical reaction, and that's why you get those yellow pit stains.
Yeah.
It's not, the yellow is actually not your sweat. The yellow is actually caused by the chemical reaction between your sweat and the aluminum.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's why I'm like, don't rub that directly on your clothes. That's going to be bad.
Yeah. I was, but I mean,
listen, as an emergency method, good for, yeah, it was really clever. Good
so
for her.
So what's like another creative zhuzh? Like, let's say like you either don't have much laundry, you're on a vacation. I love going to an Airbnb that has a washer and dryer because then I can just wash. I can pack. I did that when I went to DC. Like I brought one sweatshirt
and just
two
washed,
shirts
yeah.
and a pair of jeans and I just wash them every night.
Yeah.
So what are like good tips if you're like traveling on the go, you don't have much stuff. You're backpacking through Europe. Everything yep. has pit stains. What do you do?
I mean, I'm a big fan of hand washing. I think hand washing is one of those things that until you do it, it sounds like this massively daunting chore and like it
or
really
like it wouldn't get it clean
yeah.
enough or something.
And actually, it is. It's very easy. It's a very fast operation, especially when you're traveling. It's like so easy to do your underwear. The one thing with underwear that I like, there's always want to caution people about. People do tend to overuse their detergent both in washing machines and in hand washing.
Yeah.
And you don't want to do that because what happens is then the soap residue doesn't get washed out.
It murders your vagina.
And then with underwear in particular, exactly, it murders your vagina.
Oh.
So you just want to make sure with your unders that you're rinsing them very, 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 very well so there's no soap residue lurking around because that's itchy.
That's a
soap
really...
Soap is itchy on your
yeah.
sitch.
Vaheen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Vaheen. Oh, yeah. When you were saying
I mean, and
that.
I have a pretty like Teflon... Vaheen.
Yeah.
I'm not like, you know how there are some girl, I call them, this is like such a mean term to use, but I call them the yeast infection girls. You know, we all know
Shut
those.
Shut up. Yes.
You know exactly what it is, right? There's like always, that one girl in a group of friends like who just always has a yeast infection. There's always something
like,
going on.
Yeah. Yes. Like, oh my God.
She's again?
She's sprinting to the toilet after sex. Like she's just like it's like Chechnya down there. Like
no.
just a constant battle zone. And I don't have one of those, thank God. But I still try to be old Beulah. She's still got life in her and I try to be careful
your
of her.
Your vagina's name is Beulah.
Yes, my vagina's name is Beulah.
And that's a very, mine is named Nancy.
Wait, that's a really good vagina name.
Thank
Nancy.
You. I did it it's in high quirky. School to gross out my boyfriend. Cause he was like, he's like, what would your vagina be named? I was like, Nancy. Like, I just was like, just shut up. Like that was, it. So that's like what, why I
sticks.
Said it and it just stuck.
Yeah. Do you have a name?
No, now I feel like I need one.
Well, maybe we'll work on it.
Okay.
We'll workshop
a name.
I was going to say, we'll workshop some options.
But
show.
We're going to have to wrap up the intro soon.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
just,
yeah.
I have a follow-up. I have a question. So okay. I have an aunt who is very much a neat freak.
Okay.
And she kind of like, I don't know if this is like a passive aggressive thing that she does, but she kind of always makes it a point to like point out things that aren't clean in someone else's house.
Oh, ooh, ooh.
Be like what?
That's just bad manners.
She'll just like touch.
Oh, I'm sorry, but that's your. I just said something.
No, she. No. And I totally. And it makes
no,
me.
She agrees.
I agree, and it also has like instilled a very hyper. Like I don't like having people over my house because I have a fear of being judged.
Oh.
And it also just makes me really uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah, no,
but
that's just
like,
bad manners.
I don't have it clean enough. So it's just like, do you ever point stuff like that even to your closest friends? Or
no,
is it just something you just like leave off the table?
I absolutely not. I mean, it's funny with my friends, even my close friends who know, like who I've talked to about this. When I'm invited to people's homes because of the work that I do, almost always the invitation is opened with, please don't judge me.
Yeah.
And I mean, you know, I understand why it's not a reflection on me at all, but it kind of annoys me because first of all, my column, the whole tone of my column is very deliberately non-judgmental. And that's like the thing I'm known for. So one, that bothers me because I'm like, but you know, my whole shtick is that I'm non-judgmental about cleaning and like you live the way you live.
Right.
And if you want help, I'm here to help. And if you don't, it's not my business.
Mm-hmm.
And also it affects me not at all. The way that you live in your house, like I don't, so I don't, it's not that I don't care in a mean way, but I don't care because it doesn't affect me. You do you.
Right.
And I'll help if you want it, but if otherwise, it doesn't bother me. It's not my thing. So I hear that all the time. And I always say to my friends, like, I'm like, first of all, I'm not going to do that because you know me. And also I'm upset to think that you would think that because actually I'm just really grateful that you've invited me to your home because an invitation to join someone in their home is no small thing.
Yeah.
And I'm really always appreciative when someone invites me to their home for a meal or for a cocktail or, you know,
that's
for whatever
really,
reason.
That's a really, like, I lovely way had, to like, think of that. Yeah. I wish more people realized that because, you know what, I don't even think I've really put that much thought into it. I've been, like, weirded out when someone hasn't invited me to their house. Like, date three, and I'm like, I'm still haven't gotten a do you want to stop by my house for a drink before we go out sort of thing. But I've never thought of that. And, you know, I get that. I get critiqued on that a lot, especially when I talk to psychics or whatever. They're just like, you have to be really – you let everyone into your life, and you have to be really careful.
Oh, my God, I'm the same way.
Your house becomes an energy sponge. And, like, so – but – to this point, though, Christina, literally, when we started doing the podcast at my house, it was one, because I had this room, two, because Christina has a roommate, and three, like, Christina was, like, fully waking up on her one day of the week off, Saturday mornings, and then just, like, mopping her house down and, like, going through, like, all these steps to make sure that, like, our guests didn't, so that she didn't feel self-conscious in front of our guests. And whereas I'm kind of like, my house looks like a trash diaper, but, like, I – at least I can live with it. Like, and also that's never something I've hit about myself. I want to point out one thing, and then we'll go to the regular show. Do you know my friend Laura Shainalls?
No.
She's a writer. She was, like, a part of the original White Girl Problems trio.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But she had a video go viral last year, which was a Taylor Swift, like, spoof, where she was like, please welcome to the stage, like –
the ghost of Maya Angelou.
Like, just like shit like that. And it was like huge. And like she was just mocking the fact that like Taylor Swift literally, I think it was right after like Joan Baez came out.
And the entire like women's soccer team from the Olympics.
And like Lara was just like, is anyone exempt from like having to be welcome to Taylor Swift's stage? So it was very, very funny. But she did the video. She was obviously like had a couple glasses of wine. She's obviously just a girl in her living room like fucking around with a friend. And on her floor was some laundry. Like it was like laundry and like a book or whatever. It's just very similar to this, my house. And I would say about 10% of the comments were like, I'm so annoyed that this girl did not pick up her shit before doing this video.
Yep.
But about 90% of them were like, I feel so comfortable that she didn't clean her place before she did this. They're like, I actually think it's very charming that she's just drunk in her messy ass apartment right now. And Lara does keep a very clean apartment. So it was kind of shocking. Most people probably didn't realize she was like in the middle of moving. But I was just like, it was shocking to me how much that came up. And then I was so comforted by how many people were like, who gives a shit if her apartment's messy? She's drunk and being fun with her friend. Like, I was very relieved by that.
I have to say, the end part of that was a twist I didn't see coming.
Yeah.
Because that is definitely a big thing I hear about it all the time is people judging the background of the YouTube videos.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Like, and there is, like, you know, from time to time I'll see one and I'll just be like, oh, God, look at that room. Like, my God.
It's a mess.
Oh, my God. It's amazing. But yeah, so that's like
I'm more annoyed by like a tapestry. I'm like, you're too well thought out. Like, you do not live in front of a tapestry. Like, show what's behind the tapestry.
I never noticed things like that. Like, even there was a YouTube video I sent you fairly recently that I had probably seen maybe like 20 times.
Yeah.
And you were like, oh, yeah, he painted his popcorn ceiling. And I had never noticed it until you said it.
I loved the man for it because I said, like, very few people remember to paint the ceiling or think to paint the ceiling. But the fact that this man went with a hard green on his popcorn ceiling was impressive.
That's a bold choice. That's a bold choice.
I don't know why I'm saying thank you. all right.
By the way, it was a soul version of the Golden Girls.
We'll post it on our Twitter. Yeah. It's also in the Emotionally Broken Psychos Facebook group. Okay. Anyway, guys, let's take our phone calls. I'm excited to hear what you have to say about these people.
I am so excited about I have wanted to do phone calls on my show for a long time, and we're quite not quite there technology-wise, so I'm excited about this.
Oh, you should see what our technology is. We have a Google number. People call. We don't do live.
Yeah, no. I mean, I know it's just a Google Voice. We are like... My podcast network is we always say we're like, we're very much in startup mode.
Yeah.
I play with the formats, and the one format I just haven't started playing with is the phone calls.
Wait, what's your network?
I'm on Acast.
Oh, well, no, I'm on Acast too.
Are you?
But Please Advise is also on Loudspeakers Network. Acast is just the people that care about us enough to get us ads.
Right.
No shade.
But Acast produces my show.
Actually, a lot of shade.
Acast is amazing. So Acast, I'm one of the few people who is fully partnered with Acast. They produce my show.
Yeah.
In addition to doing all of the great ad stuff and blah, blah, blah. So I record in their office and
Caitlin's they do that.
I love Caitlin. Yeah. I love her.
She's been so good to me.
She and I went to the Women's March together.
Oh.
Caitlin, her wife, and their son, and her sister, and me. So they were my marching buddies.
I love
And it was
Caitlin.
Amazing.
Okay, good. Okay. All right. Let's do this.
Hey, Malls. Jackie, 24, San Francisco. This is a very spontaneous call. I did not plan it. But long story short, broke up with boyfriend of on and off 5 years, maybe 3 months ago. Yesterday, 2 days ago, was Valentine's Day. And we weren't really on speaking terms, but got a call from him at 11 p.m., didn't answer. Then got a text saying that he had something to drop off. Then a text saying that he had given it to someone in my building who said they would leave it by my front door. I was still awake, so I went and checked immediately. Nothing there. Went downstairs and checked. Nothing there. Texted him the next morning saying, like, hey, who'd you leave it with? That was dumb. And talked later. And he had this whole story about how he had actually come in and left by my front door and knocked, and it was like this whole grand gift and everything. Well, I got resourceful, if not, you know, crazy black, and talked to my building manager and had him look at our lobby tapes, and no entrance. So obviously it's a lie, not surprised, not mad, just obvious, but trying to decide whether or not to be petty and, you know, be like, oh, I got the gift. So amazing. And see what he does. Or if I should just be like, hey, you need help. This is a very elaborate lie that you stuck to. I would love to know what your thoughts are on whether to be above it or have some fun with it, because it is kind of amusing at this point. Please advise.
Okay. So she lives in San Francisco. Okay. I'm going to go ahead and guess that she has either a doorman building or there's a key code or something like that.
Yeah, I think it's a key code building.
So my thing is that technically what you need to know is that if he did do that, it would be breaking and entering. And that's legally considered a breaking and entering. When you don't live somewhere and you type in a code or use a key or use a neighbor to get through the door. So even though this never even actually happened, technically what he did was admitting to something illegal. Did you get a little bit nervous when she said, I mean, I didn't do anything. I didn't want to be crazy, but because first of all, what you did is not crazy.
Not crazy at all.
Not crazy at all. And like, literally, if you think that we would ever judge you for doing something that is completely logical, makes total sense.
That's actually exactly what you should do when a package goes missing.
Yeah.
So I'm actually living this right now. We're having a rash of package thefts in my building.
Okay.
And the first thing we all did was go to the super and say, you know, we're having this problem. We don't have cameras. We're trying to get them.
Okay.
But yeah, that was literally the first thing we did was to go to the super and say, we're missing a package.
Yeah.
What next?
You know?
That's like a totally rational response.
Totally rational response. I don't know. I mean, I have a bad habit of being sentimental on anniversaries and stuff like that. And I'll sometimes text an ex and say, like, I remember what today is, and I just want to like remind you that how special you were to me. Aww. Like, I'll do something like that.
Yeah.
Like, but, and I consider that to be weak and crazy in and of itself. What?
But this, it's kind-hearted. It was a difference between what you're describing and what this guy did, which is weird and manipulative and like gaslighty and like, it's,
I think he's insane.
I think he's insane.
Like, and that's why you can't even, when you said, should I be petty? I look, trust me, do I understand the impulse to fuck with someone? Of course I do. And I have taken that. I have followed that impulse way too far in the past. Like, I've really, especially in my younger years, when I was 24, what I would have done to this man is unspeakable. Like, I would have literally eaten this situation for breakfast, lunch, and dinner. It would have been the best fuel in the world for me to just like go on a rampage.
Yeah.
There would be a.
How did you feel when the rampages were over, though?
I don't know. Sometimes they made me more successful. Like, I would be writing.
Did you get off on it and it like made you feel powerful?
Well, no.
Or did it make you feel bad afterwards?
Okay. So there's a really, okay. So I had an ex aunt who came on here last year and we hadn't spoken for many years. And we actually just kind of like loosely reconciled after my previous boyfriend and I broke up, because he was one of those guys that was like, didn't want you talking to your exes or being, yeah, saying hi at a party or whatever. So I went out of my way to
don't stay with that type.
Yeah, by the way, should have been a warning sign when I was ripped by my neck from an embrace with my ex-boyfriend, a friendly brief embrace with my ex-boyfriend who's with his new girlfriend. But anyway, he wound up coming on this podcast and I dragged him for years. Like, my Tumblr was basically a dragging this man website for years. He was known exclusively as Flip Phone, and people will still bring up Flip Phone to me. Amazing. Because he dumped me on a flip phone. Amazing. So like, of he like literally this. The day he got his iPhone, he like texted me, he's like, I don't have a flip phone anymore. And like,
stop.
We've been broken up for years.
Stop.
Like,
it.
I really broke him with the flip phone thing. And this is
couldn't love this more.
This is a man that has a fair amount of mental sanity. Like, there are definitely people who are like, that guy is like kind of a psycho or whatever. But we're all from the comedy world. Everyone hates each other and is constantly diagnosing each other and is resentful of one another.
Right.
So that's pretty like, but par for the course. But he wound up coming on this podcast and being like, I understand why you dragged me. Like, I dumped you in a really unfair way. I did it like willy-nilly. I just like kind of didn't want to talk on the phone that day. And like, I fucked with you. And he's like, I'm really sorry I did that. So I'd never felt guilt about that, because one, that writing was not only extremely cathartic for me, but it was one of the things that gained me many followers on that platform that I still have to this day. Right. So thank you, yeah, for that. But there are times that I've, years later, I've felt incredibly petty for saying something, especially when I was younger and like just an asshole. And like, I would like, you know, fat shame someone or something like disgusting. Like, that's the kind of thing I feel bad about. I think this guy's going to kill you if you don't like stay, if you don't.
I don't think he's necessarily dangerous, but I think that. So the reason I was asking about how it made you feel was because the first question you should always ask yourself when you want to like react in some way is not how it's going to affect the other person. Cause fuck them.
Yeah.
I mean, they're just some other person. The thing you need to worry about is, number one, you need to worry about how it's going to affect you.
How you
so, like,
live
the first
it.
Assessment yeah. you should be is like, okay, here are my options. And so she gave two options. There's actually a third one that she didn't say at all, that I think is the one that she should take. So, like you say, like, okay, here are my three options. If I do A, how am I going to feel about it? If I do B, how am I going to feel about it? If I do C, how am I going to feel about it? And then make a decision based on that, like how it's going to make you feel. So
right.
for me, I have learned in my life that actually it's not – I don't take like cold comfort out of proving someone wrong. Like mm-hmm. I had in my late 20s and early 30s, I kind of had like a sort of a nervous breakdown maybe. Mm-hmm. I was out of work for a couple of
years. That's around the time.
I had been on a very successful trajectory. I then like – my life fell apart in every possible way. And I ended up kind of being out of work for a couple of years and blah, blah. I obviously pulled it all back together. And now I have you know, a very successful career that has led to me being written about in the New York Times with my photo, which means that people from my past saw it.
Yeah.
And saw like, oh my God, that's Jolie. The last time I thought about her, she was like fat and unemployed and she was a total loser. And now she's being written up in the Times. And they, as well as all my college roommates, P.S.
Success.
And people crawled out of the woodwork.
Mm-hmm.
And they crawled out of the woodwork ostensibly to congratulate me. But you think like, oh, that should make me feel so good because like I showed them. But actually, it didn't make me feel good at all because it just made me realize how that they're just bad people.
When my friends get amazing career news, I almost feel guilty congratulating them at first because I'm like, I don't want to be one of those people in their mind that like, no, but let's you say know we when haven't it's genuine. Spoken.
Yeah. No.
I had a friend sell something to like literally Oprah's company this year. And like,
it, oh my God, that's the dream.
It was big news. It was everywhere. And I just texted him and I said, tell me how many of your loser ex-boyfriends text you this week.
Yes.
And I just was like, cause that's going to be it.
That's the perfect thing to say.
Yeah.
But the thing is, you also know the difference between someone who's genuinely excited for you and someone who, because you know how they've treated you in the past.
Right.
Like I also, of course, I had friends who I hadn't heard from in a long time who were like, oh my God, Jolie, it's been a million years, but I saw you in the Times. Mm-hmm. And those people I love to hear from. And I did, you know, write back or text back or whatever. But it was the people who had, it was the people who threw me over when times were bad.
Yeah.
Who then all of a sudden, when I had some success, they came crawling out of the woodwork. And I always thought that would make me feel good. And it actually ended up not making me feel good. So it's not exactly a one-to-one situation with this caller. But that's kind of where I'm coming from with that advice about think about how it's going to make you feel and put yourself first. The one thing that she didn't offer as an option was to do nothing, which is what I would tell her to do. Do nothing.
Right.
You know he lied. You know there was no package. You know he lied. You know he didn't get into the building, so he's not a threat to you in that way, and that he's not entering and leaving. And I think it's time to just never have contact with him again and just say, you know, this is a person who is a little off and who doesn't wish me well and engaged in some strange behavior, and I don't need to keep him in my life and let him engage in future strange behavior.
Yeah. I'm wondering what his motivation was. Like, if he wanted to hear her say, like, I can't accept a Valentine's Day gift from you because I have a boyfriend. Or
maybe
wanted to see if there was still a chance. Or maybe he's just fucking not. I think
it was more just like, is she still going to talk to me? Do I still?
Right.
Is there still something there?
Yeah.
Do I still have power in some way?
But what's protocol? Like, I agree with you. She should do nothing.
Yeah.
Like,
and I understand it's natural to be curious about his motivation. But here's the thing with things like that, even if you get an explanation, it's not going to be satisfying because it's crazy. Because the behavior itself is crazy. There isn't going to be no satisfying explanation.
I know.
The explanation is probably going to be like just create a whole host of new questions.
Yeah.
And then you're wrapped up in this and you're putting your time and your energy into this person who just doesn't deserve it.
No.
And the best thing to do is just to say, like, this was a crazy thing. It's now a great brunch story.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to know the answer, and that's okay. And that's partly what makes the brunch story great, is that there's no answer.
I would like to know from our listeners if you guys have any theories on why this guy was doing this. Because there's a lot of times, especially with men, and especially when it comes to like emotional intelligence, that I can have a little bit of like a blind side as to why someone would do that, especially if it's something devious. Like, mm-hmm. I never assume anyone's lying.
Right. I'm the same way. I'm way too trusting. I think everybody has a good heart.
Yeah.
I will say, and you know, not to get like too into like politics or anything, but like it's one of the things that's been so difficult about this particular time in our country for me is being forced to reckon with how utterly mean the American populace is. Like, I just had this, I had a better view of the like temperament of Americans.
I went on a date the other night and I thought just started crying.
I thought we were kind-hearted.
Yeah.
And we're not.
No, we're not. No, well, because we're...
I personally, Jolie Care, am, but the American character, that's not part of it. And I never realized that until now.
Well, we're also spoiled because we grew up in Boston, right?
Oh, yeah.
Then you moved to what, New York?
I moved to New York,
and yeah. I moved to L.A. So, like, there... I mean, while L.A. actually is the most murderous police force in the country, by the way, I don't know if people know that. I like to bring it up as much as possible because people all think it's all in the South. No, no, no. LAPD is, like, one of the worst, if not the worst. But I don't think... It never occurred to me. And I don't want to live my life... I was talking to someone about this yesterday, like, who was saying she got catfished and she's like, I feel so fucking stupid and blah, blah, blah. And I was like, you shouldn't walk through your life expecting that people are going to be doing the worst possible thing.
Exactly.
So that's – and I was just about to say, like, I went on a – it's – I'm so sensitive right now about everything you're talking about, just how mean people are and how scared I am and, like, how shocked I still am by the election. Like, I've been sleeping way too – I've been depression sleeping. It's been bad. And I went on this date and I just, like – we were talking about it and I just started, like, crying and I felt so embarrassed because I was, like, I'm crying on a date and I was, like, this is so bad. And I just said to him, I was, like, I'm so sorry. Like, I don't know. He's, like, I get it. He's, like, this is not about – you're not being, like, an overly emotional person. This is, like, catastrophic what's going on. Yeah. And it would be weird if you weren't that upset.
Yeah, exactly. I cried on my podcast if it makes you feel better.
Oh, I cry on this podcast.
I did a whole bit.
Yeah.
Like, the episode we recorded right after the election, I did a whole bit about – leading with kindness, because my whole column, we talked about that in the intro, like, my thing is being non-judgmental and just being, like, kind and funny and offering help. Like, what, that's the best way to be in the world. It makes me such, like, a more fulfilled person to walk through life with that attitude. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that I'm always telling people that that actually, it really does make a difference in your life if that's the way that you lead. And so I was talking about leading with kindness. And I was like, you know, listen, get angry. I'm angry and I'm going to do something about it and blah, blah, blah. And I'm not saying don't feel the feelings you're having and don't get angry and all that. But what I'm saying is get angry, but still lead with kindness.
Yeah.
And I started, I mean, I was just like full on deluge of tears.
Yeah.
I couldn't even get the word kindness out. I was just like,
it's hard. It's really hard. And I also think, you know, that's something that is important for us as, like, let's say I host a podcast. I'm going to be a mouthpiece on this thing. It's as important to me that someone would laugh at my joke as they understand, like, how deeply something has affected me in an emotional way. And I've cried on this podcast a few times because if I'm going to also, like, be flippant and make jokes about, you know, oh, you should, like, blow your boyfriend's dad or whatever, like, I also need to have that part of me that's going to be, like, like, I'm also real. Like, the funny,
you need
comes
to show
from,
your humanity.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
So, for those of you out there who lack humanity and understand what the fuck is wrong with this man, please call 323-450-7408 and throw out your theories, because I don't want this. I don't want Jackie to go out and discover what's wrong with him. But
no, but I want this to be a parlor game. Yeah. I want to sit around and come up with theories.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. What is wrong with this man? Has anything like this ever happened to you? Again, 323-450-7408. We're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back with our next call.
Hey, Malls and guests. This is Neely. I'm a fan of all of your podcasts. I did have a question I've been wanting to ask you for a few weeks now. I had, I guess you call it a relationship, and right around Christmas time, it's been, like, on and off for about, like, 2.5 years now. And I'm having trouble getting over it, but not in the typical, like I'm so heartbroken that this person I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, you know, that's not going to happen, or, like, I want us to get back together and go get married or something. Like, it's not that situation. It's just that most of our relationship was, like, one of us just instigating, like, a fight via text. This was, like, long distance. He was about 4 hours away, so... most of the time we spent together were, like, weekends or trips together. So most of, like, during the week, or there'd be even, like, a month or so maybe where we didn't see each other. So we would just be, like, angry, just fighting with each other all the time. And I miss having that, like, outlet. I miss knowing that I can get under someone's skin and knowing that if I send like something mean to somebody that it is going to bother them, that they are going to respond. And that essentially that's what I miss. So, yeah, I know that sounds psychotic, but, that's it. I just don't like that now. He's totally done with this. He can totally ignore, all of it. And that's basically what I need to know now is like, where can I put this energy of like when I used to just like love fighting with somebody? I don't want to suddenly like take my rage out on, people I actually do care about, like my friends or my family. So I don't know. I've given like everything you do normally post breakup, like join the gym. I'm back in therapy. I am like back on Bumble, but I think because this isn't a typical like heartache type of thing, it's more of like just, you know, like the being ignored and then not having someone who like enjoys fighting with me back. That I'm missing, that's what kind of bother me. So I don't really know like how you fix.
Okay, so I should preface that I feel like I have to be kind of extra nice to Neely because she's a very important part of our Facebook group on Emotionally Broken Psycho. She's very active. But yeah, this does sound psychotic. That was the right word that you used. When you use the
right
word.
Speaking of emotionally broken psychos.
Wait, can we give her props though for recognizing this behavior?
Yes.
Being really clear and honest,
yeah,
about it, because that's major.
That's true.
She sees it. She sees it with clarity. She's able to verbalize it. She's able to acknowledge that it's not healthy. She's able to acknowledge the potential for where it could lead, which is like lashing out at her loved ones.
Yeah.
So like, let's give her some.
No, that is
her self-awareness is major.
You're right. That is really major. The only thing that concerns me about you realizing that and then not being like, I don't know, like there's certain things that when I realize I'm doing it, I can pretty much immediately self-correct because I know that I'm doing something that is destructive to my life and to others. And like, I just have never spoken to anyone who's like ideal relationship model is like an Ike and Tina sort of situation. Like, this seems like crazy to me that that you would want, I mean, whatever.
That you're getting fulfillment from rage,
yeah,
from the expression of rage, and the mutual expression of rage, because yeah, it wasn't her just yelling at him. It was him reacting.
There's something deeper there, yeah. I think. There's something deeper that she needs to figure out what it is. And in the meantime, you have to find a way to channel that energy in another form, whether it's
I was going to suggest martial arts. Like, yeah, I was like, you need to be in martial arts.
She's going
to
be an MMA fighter now.
Yeah. I was thinking the exact, get involved in some sort of act, get a punching bag for your apartment.
Yeah.
I remember I had an ex, I just showed up one day and had a punching bag in his apartment. And he's like, sometimes I get mad and I want to hit things. And
But it also might just be also having that emotional intimacy with someone again, where you can lay into them and know that it's going to be fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what she's really missing. I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think this is something.
But it's not healthy.
And I think that this is something she really needs to unpack with her therapist. This is, and if the therapist she's seeing, like if she's just seeing a talk therapist to like work through some sad times post breakup,
yeah,
that kind of therapist may not be the right type of therapist to unpack these rage issues.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say be diligent about finding the right person.
Thank you for saying that, because there are many types of therapists in this world, but one that I have suffered the most from is after realizing I've been going to someone for a year and a half and I have not improved my own life. All I have done is found a person that I can pay $195 an hour to bitch to.
Yeah. And listen, like, there's value in that.
Yeah.
There's value. I mean, you know, just straight talk therapy where you basically have someone to vent to for 50 minutes a week is hugely valuable, but it's not hugely valuable when you're talking about
changing behaviors.
Exactly. So for that, you know, you might want to go to
cognitive behavioral,
which I can never say. So it's like, you know, cognitive behavioral therapy is CBT is like, that's the abbreviation, but CBT is also the abbreviation for something else.
What?
Cockball torture.
Oh. Whoa.
I didn't even know that.
Why is Christina like, oh, me, I'm like the cockball torture queen, and yeah, I didn't even
I
know that.
I don't know.
I learned about it in one of those, Molly, you'll appreciate this because it's an awesome thing. I was with a friend in Provincetown,
yeah,
and we were leafing through one of those like free, you know, local alt rags, sure, and like in the back they have all the sexy ads. Well, this is old now. I don't think they have sexy ads anymore. I think business model has been torpedoed by the internet. But yeah, and we were like, we saw one and it was like CBT, and we were like, what is this? And then we found out.
Did you make a phone call? Or
I forget how we sleuthed around and found the answer.
That is really, really funny because I've never.
You will never think of cognitive behavioral therapy the same way again.
Well, also, it's like, why cockball? Like, that almost seems like a little bit redundant to me. Like, I know that there's men. I know that there are balls that are not testicles. But I feel like that's a very common thing. Like, guys want to have their nuts stepped on in high heels, right? Like,
yeah,
like that's the one I've encountered the most. I've never encountered that personally, but I know about those videos on the internet. But cockball torture is like redundant, man. And I mean, do you feel there's a redundancy there in the beginning there?
No, because I mean, maybe some guys like the balls and some people like the cock and some like both. And
oh, it's not like, oh, it's like cock and balls.
Cock and balls.
Oh, okay, yeah, okay, exactly. Okay. Exactly. I thought it was like, okay, never mind.
Yeah,
look, exactly. I don't know how this turned into this.
Because we're telling this poor girl to go get CBT.
Maybe that's what she should do.
She literally probably
maybe she should be a dominatrix.
I thought of that too. I thought of that. I said, I think there's probably some sort of her sexuality that she hasn't explored yet, mm-hmm, that has a very dominant side to it, which is why she, because this is not, you know, that sort of like, what you guys were basically doing when you know that that's barely a real fight is it like a very advanced form of role play. And I think that like that might be a side of her sexuality she wants to maybe consider exploring. And there's a huge market out there for that. I'm not saying you have to get money for it, but I'm saying there's a lot of people who like to be tortured.
Yeah.
And I think that that could be maybe something you're into. Just
in
be
a healthy,
really
safe way.
Just be really safe.
I think maybe some Freudian therapy will help her to unlock if that's what's going on, because if it's a psychosexual thing, you want the Freudian therapy to untangle that ball of mess.
How do you figure something like that out?
There's no question that this is a sexual thing. Like, literally,
but we were just suggesting she go to CBT therapy, and now we're saying,
I know,
like,
well, because I think we're trying to work through like where this is coming.
There's
from.
A lot of layers, babe.
Right. Like, so we're saying like talk therapy may not be enough, and maybe you need cognitive behavioral therapy for this. But then actually, as we talked it out, we're sort of saying no, this is a psychosexual thing, so you probably need a Freudian.
Because
analyst.
It doesn't appeal to her to do this to people she actually has care for in her life. Like, if this was a person that just, like, got off on raging, that would be a totally different thing. But, like, the specific thing she misses about this relationship that went on for 2 years is the fighting. And it's only been 2 weeks. So, like, this might be, like, her thing she gets off on.
Yeah. Being able to, like, the thing that stuck with me that she said was that it wasn't the fighting, it was the getting under his skin. And to me, that's a power thing. Like she said, like, knowing I affected him, like, that's a power thing.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think she's gonna be okay, but I think she's gotta do a deep dive. I think it's gonna be fascinating.
Yeah.
I mean, I think definitely maybe exploring some kink in addition to the therapy might be good for her. I have to add in, because obviously, you know, my primary role is as a cleaning expert, and then I'm an advice columnist secondarily. But I have a podcast listener who owns a specialty cleaning service in San Francisco, mm-hmm, that caters to the kink community, and he cleans their sex dungeons.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so he had heard me, because I do a lot. I mean, I cover the topics that no other cleaning experts will touch, right? So, I mean, cum stains are my bread and butter, and, you know, I mean, constantly talking about ball washing and, you know, cleaning barf up from
things.
You
know, period
blah, blah.
Blood. You know the trick for period blood?
There are so many of them. Which one is your favorite?
My favorite is from Margaret Cho.
Oh, I heard this one. I was the one I was going to bring up.
And it's right after Britney walked out of a limo with her skirt like kind of above her head, and she just had these like brutally period stained underwear. Margaret Cho wrote
that. And I'm a Britney super fan.
Yeah, it
maybe
was.
Maybe I blocked it out.
It was really bad. Like, I think
I might have actually blocked it out because that is such a personal thing to me, right? Because of what I do and like mad love for Britney. And
also, I think a lot of most publications were not down to publish that because it is a violation, like in a real way, to like expose a woman's menstruation, like, and also to like shame her for it publicly when like any
it's
woman
like that,
can tell
it's
you.
It's like that thing on Jezebel when they like shamed Whoozy Whatsy from the Sony studio leak about buying like
that
pubic dye. And
I've never liked that writer as a person because I think she's one of the meanest fucking people I've ever met. And when I saw that, it was, I like literally came because I was like, yep, she's still the meanest person I've ever met. Anyway, sorry. That's okay. But yeah, I think it's really fucked up. The trick that Margaret Cho said, you need to use your own spit.
Yes.
And you need to spit on the blood because your enzymes are the only thing that can break down
your
blood.
It works. It's not the only thing.
What else
But
works?
It does really work. Another weirdo thing that really works. And actually, I used to write for Jezebel. Before the pubic shaming.
Sure, sure, sure.
And I did like a monster period stain post for Jezebel, because if you're writing for Jezebel and you're a cleaning expert, that's what you do.
Yeah.
And I did another monster one about vaginal discharge that was like fascinating and really emotionally charged. But the period one, so there are like 1,000 different ways, honestly. But one of the weirdo ones that functions similarly to your own saliva is meat tenderizer.
Oh.
And the theory is basically, the theory of why it works, well, it's not a theory, but the explanation of why it works is basically exactly the same, that there are enzymes in your saliva that break down food, including blood. And meat tenderizer is used to break down food.
Damn.
That's how it tenderizes the meat. And so that's why it will also break down blood. So the big thing to know about meat tenderizer is that it comes in seasoned and unseasoned form. And
I was just gonna ask.
And you
let me season my underwear.
And you must only use the unseasoned one, because the seasoned one is like
pepper.
It has a color to it, so it'll stain with that. But the unseasoned kind is white. It's it's like cream of tartar or like baking soda. It's that kind of powder. And you just mix it with a little bit of water to make like a thick paste, and then just like scrub it on and rinse under cold running water.
What's like something that your average person has in the house at all time? Because I don't know if I don't have meat tenderizer. Like, is there something?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, your saliva.
Yeah.
You've got it in your little house all the time.
That's true.
But,
OxyClean?
OxyClean is great. Honestly, just dish soap and running water.
Yeah.
Especially
hot,
if it's
hot
fresh.
Or cold.
Colds. Okay. Yeah.
You put it over a glass, right? Like my grandmother, whenever I would get a stain on my shirt, my grandmother would put the stain over a glass, run it under hot water, and then apply dish soap.
Oh, that's interesting. I think probably she was just doing that. I probably just have a surface to create a little agitation.
Okay.
Let me think of a few other ones for you. Salt, saline solution. If you're a contact lens wearer, saline solution is a great stain remover. Rubbing alcohol is also just like a general purpose great stain remover, which I mentioned so that I can tell you this trick, which is that hand sanitizer is basically entirely made up of alcohol.
Yeah.
So if you ever get a stain on your clothes, like when you're eating out, if you have a bottle of hand sand, take a little bit of the hand sand, put it on your finger and like massage it into the stain, and it'll take it out. And it works on old stains too.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. And we discovered that. Well, you'll appreciate this because you sort of know this world. We discovered it one afternoon when we were drinking on the Gawker rooftop. One of the guys was like, how would I get this stain out? And I was like, oh, rubbing alcohol. And I was like, oh, wait, do we have hand sand around? I'm like, that should do it because it has alcohol in it. Let's try it. And we're all just sitting around like taking stains out of various people's pants with hand sand.
That's
and
so
it works.
Genius. Yeah. My mind immediately derailed from cleaning when you said it has alcohol in it. And I thought you were about to say, so if you're really broke and you have hand sanitizer around, it will get you drunk. That's what my mind went to immediately.
Yeah. People do drink hand sanitizer.
That's
it's
really
dangerous.
Scary.
Please don't do that, you guys.
Stick
with Robitussin, kids.
Seeing a homeless man drinking
a bottle
of
Listerine. That was a joke.
I saw a homeless man drinking a bottle of Listerine when I was like 9. And I said to my mom, I was like, that's so good that he's taking care of his teeth. And my mom was like, Molly, he's getting drunk. I was like, oh. I like really thought he was like – just vigilant about
his oral hygiene.
Yeah, which, you know, hygiene starts with the mouth. Jolie's going to read our letter. We have a letter, you guys.
Excellent. All right, here we go. Hey, Malls, Christina, and guest. I'm guest today.
That's
I
you.
Like that. And she is capital G guest. I'm writing in today because I need some help in the form of an opinion, wake up call, or slap in the face. Really long story short, I very recently visited a sex chat room, and ever since the experience has kind of been consuming me. The backstory here is I've been in a committed monogamous relationship for over 10 years. We love each other, we have chosen each other as partners, and I do believe that, to an extent, love is a choice. That said, I've gone throughout my whole life always having crushes on other people, even if I'm in a committed relationship. This has proven harmless until a couple of years ago when I fell in love with a friend. Mm-mm. I know it's questionable whether you can love two people at once, but I think I did. My friend and I cared for each other deeply, but never crossed the line physically, even though we wanted to. 3 years ago, my friend moved away and I was heartbroken. I started therapy and have been working through this heartbreak ever since. As a reminder, I am still somehow happily with the one man I truly love. In therapy this week, I mentioned to my therapist that it is my personality to always have a crush on someone else. She calls this my plan B. Mm-hmm. She also said it's not just my personality, but a result of having an alcoholic father as a young child and feeling insecure in any connection I have been able to make since I was a small girl. This blew my fucking mind. I was sobbing because men and relationships have defined my entire existence, something I'm not proud of, but it's true. I've been trying really hard to move on from the feelings surrounding my friend and realize that I can talk to strangers online and essentially play out any fantasy I've had over the last 3 years. This had never occurred to me before, and I have to say it feels exhilarating, terrifying, and shameful all at the same time. At this point, it is only chatting, no pictures, videos, etc. But I'm terrified this could be the beginning of risky sexual behavior. I do not want my husband to know, but he would not be okay with any of this. I don't know who I am right now, and it is freaking me the fuck out. Also, this message board shit is super 90s, but whatever. Am I just plain fucked up? Is this all daddy issues? Does anyone else like me do this? Ugh, please advise.
Okay, so what I'm assuming it's a chick because of the way that her therapist diagnosed her situation. Normally, I would say fuck that therapist. It sounds like a lot of hot noise, but like you've been seeing this person for a while and like that. I don't completely disagree with that theory. I grew up in a similar situation. My dad was not around, I was fine with that when I was growing up. But I think that I have put, especially in my 20s, way too much emphasis on my by male approval. And all right. I think the sex chat room would be fine if you could be honest about it with your spouse.
Yeah.
I think that would be fine, but you're in a relationship where you can't be honest about who you are.
Yeah.
And so
did it raise a flag for you where she said that she was terrified at the thought of continuing down this path? Because that was the point at which I started thinking this is not because using a chat room is not okay. Because using a chat room for her, and I do agree, I do think that was a woman, because the way she talked about daddy issues was it seems like it will be a problem for her, and she already knows that. If she's already this emotionally tied up about it, it's already something that's not healthy, and it's not a path that she should go down, because it's only going to become more unhealthy, possibly all-consuming, probably torpedo her marriage. Mm-hmm. So I would avoid the chat room for the time being while you get a handle on what's going on. Cause it's just, the chat room is just a symptom of something bigger.
I mean, it could also be that she's trying to be in a monogamous relationship when she's not a monogamous person.
That's what I was thinking too, is that mm-hmm. it sounds like she married a guy that like monogamy is the only option for him. And like, look, I think I'm the type of person that's really only into monogamy myself when I'm committed. But I'm getting that too. I think that she might, but that was my first instinct too, is like, you're not a monogamous person. That's okay. Own it, baby. To quote Lisa Rinna, own it, baby. But, when your therapist steps in with this other piece, that's when I started to think maybe she is a monogamous person. She just has serious, like, she acts out. Like, she acts out. I don't know if this is like.
Or she needs love from more than one outlet for whatever reason. And yeah. But if it's not a sexual or physical kind of love, it's like something else. Or I'm not really sure.
It's also possible that she's in denial about how fulfilling this marriage actually is.
That's what I was thinking too, is that like this, I mean, it just, I've been in too many relationships, and it's a promise I've made to myself about my future relationships, is that if I'm afraid to tell someone that I'm with literally anything about myself or my doings, then that means I'm with the wrong person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to be someone that you can sit down and, I mean, we've had talks about this where it's like, oh, I wonder if he ever told his girlfriend that he cheated on her leading up to the wedding. And any happy, successful marriage I know, there aren't secrets like that. Like, mm-hmm. that has been brought up, and that person loves you anyway. Like, I don't know if you're meant to be married to this person.
I mean, the question is too, is the husband also as monogamous as she thinks? Like, I think she needs to be open to the possibility that his answer may surprise her. Not that I think that he's really going to be like, okay, let's have an open marriage or let's be poly. Like, I don't yeah. realistically think that that's what's going to happen.
Right.
But there may be some surprise there that he says, like, I'm okay with you doing this within parameters if it's like
flirting,
sexually fulfilling for you in some way, and I'm comfortable with this. Or like, you just never know. I think you have to be open to that possibility.
Yeah, because sometimes people, you only assume your partner will freak out because, let's say, like, they have wanted to do this the whole time. So they are hyper vigilant about making sure that you are faithful as fuck. Because if they have to live a lifestyle that they don't necessarily want to live, you have to live it too. So, like, there could be, I mean, and let's also look at what the landscape of your husband's life probably is. Like, we just give men a pass, like a general pass. You're gonna check a girl out in public. Guys check girls out in public. It happens. Not necessarily
totally
dog
accepted behavior.
Yeah, porn on the reg, totally accepted behavior. Yeah. Like, I mean, all of those things. Male sexuality is so protected, and so, so I really think that this has to start with like a conversation that's very honest between you and your husband, and then you need to go from there. And maybe the way that you introduce the chat room thing is not leading with it, but saying like, I've had interest in just these types of conversations. They're not emotional for me, but I do find them to be a turn on, but I'm completely committed to you emotionally. Mm-hmm. Like,
but she isn't completely committed to him emotionally. I mean, she already isn't because she's lying to him. So that's a breach of commitment.
True.
In and of itself. And then she's had these other emotional affairs on her husband. Like, yeah. That, I mean.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I wonder how emotionally intimate she was with this friend that she was crushing on for so long.
It sounds.
And did they
sounds
talk
like
about
it was
it?
Intense.
It's, I mean, she and the friend talked about it. Yeah, she and the friend basically, like, according to her, I think she said basically that they never crossed the line, but they had both acknowledged that there was a flirtation there.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like this is someone who got married too young. That's like my biggest thing with a lot of our callers is just like, you need to know who you are before you get married, because you're only gonna be trying to fit into something that you just grow up so much. Like, I'm a different person at 33 than I was from 30, like in a huge way.
Yeah.
I change every year, so I don't know how you could expect to do that with another person. I don't know when they got married, but I think if she listens to this show, she's probably at least under 40. I don't know.
Right, and been married 10 years, so she got married probably in her late 20s, maybe younger. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't know if that's necessarily maybe the case, and it may be the case that they've grown apart in their marriage in a way that she just hasn't seen yet.
Yeah.
And maybe it's manifesting in all of these ways. And really the answer is just as plain as the nose on her face. And it's that
yeah.
you two have just gone apart. And that's, you know, listen, it's sad, but it's okay.
It's okay. It's my mom is getting a divorce now. And I see, you know, yeah. she has so much guilt and so much sadness about it. And I, the one thing that I say to her all the time, and because I believe this to be true about a lot of my previous relationships too, they were not a failure. Like, just because it didn't work out, it wasn't a failure. Like, for 12 years, my mom was very, you know, she was happily married to this man and, you know, helped raise his kids and was just like, yeah. But it's not a personal failing. I mean, the statistics alone should show you that it's really, really hard to make it work in life.
Happens to half the people.
Yeah.
So, I mean.
And probably would be even more if more people were
honest. About yeah. I think a lot of people stay in bad marriages to, you know, for financial reasons, to avoid having to admit that it didn't work out.
Oh, people will break up with
for
their,
the kids, yeah. for religious reasons. I mean, there are loads and loads of for ego.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there are loads of reasons that people stay in, not only in bad marriages, but bad relationships of all kinds.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. Like, there's way too many girls who call here with boyfriends that should have been dumped a year ago.
And I'll just say from my own experience, I mean, I'm a different kind of sort of animal than from most people, because I don't experience loneliness in the way that other people do.
Same. Yeah. I don't feel that.
This is like, yeah, you and I are very similar. It's great.
Do you know your Myers-Briggs?
Yeah, I'm INFJ.
I'm an INFP. Yeah, so that's pretty really close. We're really close. Yeah.
Yeah.
Similar.
Okay, yeah. It's like, yeah,
all these eyes in here.
Oh, I'm definitely an introvert. Oh, yeah. I love my alone time. I love nothing more than being alone. So I don't experience loneliness in the same way, and I'm acknowledging that before I say what I'm about to say, which is I have never been worse off alone than I was in a bad relationship. And even though every breakup I have been through, and I have been through some serious breakups, has been deeply painful for me. And it has taken a very long time for me to recover from the ending of my serious relationships. There was never a point at which I was alone and thinking, I'm so lonely and this is so awful that it would be better to be back in that relationship. There's always been clarity for me that was worse.
Yeah.
No matter how bad I'm feeling in the wake of a breakup, or how devastating it is, or how many years, I mean, literal years it takes me to get. I'm not normal in these emotional ways. But it's always been so clear to me that was better.
Yeah.
I want other women to feel brave.
Well, that's like that old Dolly Parton quote where it's like, I'd rather be alone than miserable.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
And yeah, if you don't want to listen to me, listen to Dolly, because Dolly knows. You know,
Dolly does know, yeah, for real. Knows.
Yeah,
that is, you're exactly right. I can't believe how, like, honestly and real you just captured that very truth, which is that being in a bad relationship or being in a relationship in which you're not happy, those moments in which you're alone, and especially if you feel oppressed by this person in any way, it's just like you don't know what to do with yourself. Yeah. You literally don't know what to do with your physical being. But like, as a single person, like, I don't have anyone to report to. It doesn't matter what I do.
It's the best thing in the world, right?
Right? No one to call at night to say, oh, how was your day?
I don't have to check in. Yeah.
Oh, no check-ins. It's great. So, I don't know, girl. I think this starts with an honest conversation. But Jolie, thank you so much for like shedding so much light on that, because I think that last piece in particular is very, very important, what you just said, and something that a lot of people should think about. Is this still the girl that wants to hit her boyfriend? Is that who we're talking? Oh, no, that's another different.
Okay. No, but actually, I was going to say,
We've had a very interesting thread of questions.
I think that the girl, I meant to say this, I think that the girl who wants to fight with the boyfriend should get together with the boyfriend from the first question with a fake package.
Yeah.
I feel like they're going to be a perfect love match.
Poor Neely. Oh my God. No, it's so true. Boyfriend with a fake package. Guys, seriously, I need you to call in with your theories about that, because I am way too naive to ever imagine why someone would do that.
Yeah.
Do we have another call? Yeah. All right.
Hey, Please Advise Nation. Mall's Christina guest. My name's Ashley. I am 33 and I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. I've been listening to the pod for a long time, but this is my first call. Unfortunately, I don't have a question, just really a comment. So I just finished listening to the Women's March episode, the first episode that Molly's recorded in D.C. And I was also at the Women's March. I really wish that we could have done a meetup here, but hopefully next time, and I think that there will be a next time. I was just calling because listening to this episode of the pod, just I'm almost in tears. It has me all in my feelings. The day was pretty terrific for me and really inspiring, and I've been inspired by Molls, Christina, and Please Advise for a long time, and just hearing your experience and hearing so many other women and men's experience that day was pretty tremendous. And I just wanted to say thank you for recording in D.C. Thank you for getting so many people's perspective of the day. I thought it was great. I mean, listening, and especially the part where everyone was walking past Trump's hotel, I had the exact same thoughts, and I heard the shame chant, and it just brought me back to such a great and spectacular day. And I just wanted to call and say thanks for recording it, how inspiring it is, and I think this is just the only the beginning. So thanks, you guys have a great day.
Smaltimore, what's up? Ashley, thank you for, first of all, I love Baltimore. Shout out to Baltimore.
I love Baltimore.
Yeah, I have an ex from there. And like the most painful part of our breakup is that I don't think I can go back to Baltimore. I will probably be going back to Washington, D.C. for the cherry blossoms this year because I was told to go. You were also at the Women's March. Were you in D.C.?
I was at the one in New York.
Okay.
Yeah, I went to New York.
I mean, it was a wild day. I don't know what Christina did. LA, I did DC. What was New York like?
It was amazing. Yeah. It was amazing. I think the only thing for me was that I noticed that it was very white, and I was disappointed. So I'm half white and half Indian. And I was disappointed not to see.
Sorry, do you mean like India?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I was disappointed not to see more. I mean, I don't look like an Indian woman, but so when I say
you
this,
do
I don't
not.
Mean
that
this
was shocking.
I don't I mean this super ask- liberal. I don't mean this literally, but I was sad not to see more women who look like me.
Yeah.
Meaning I wanted to see more, you know, of my own people. I saw obviously, you know, a lot of half of my own people.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I mean, it was amazing. And like, I mean, New York is incredible right now. New York has just never been better. This is a not a great comparison to make because it's a different, obviously it's a different event and it's a different, necessarily a different response to it. But in a lot of ways, it does feel like New York after 9/11 in terms of the camaraderie of New Yorkers banding together with an attitude that we're all in this together.
Mm-hmm.
I miss that. You don't really have that camaraderie in LA.
Yeah, not at
like,
all.
There are like little things like there was the blackout after in 2003 that mm-hmm. had that same kind of yeah. tenor to it. And also I imagine like Sandy was a lot like that.
Sandy was definitely a lot like that. Everyone really helping. Well, not everyone. I had a weird Sandy experience. Okay. I had someone do something really, really rotten to me. But other than that, yeah. But yeah, right now I think people really feel very connected to their neighbors. Like my corner bodega, right? So in New York, we all have our bodega.
Yeah.
Everyone calls it like it's my bodega. So my bodega.
And I actually had a bodega because my dad owned
one. Oh my God, you like win yeah. you win the my bodega game. So my bodega, there was a photograph of my bodega that was the lead photograph for the Washington Post story about the bodega strike.
Mm-hmm.
And I went in, I saw it the next day, and I went in and I was like, you guys, you're the lead photo in the Washington Post article about this, and they were like, you're kidding, oh my God. And I like pulled it up on my phone and I showed them, and like I didn't even need to buy anything. I just went in to tell them that I had seen this, and I was like, I'm really glad you did that, and you know, mm-hmm. if there's ever anything you need, and like, you know, there's that kind of feeling right now where like I don't know, it's just as bad as things are in the country, it's a great time in New York.
Yeah.
And the march felt very much that way, and it was like I mean, it was, I did say at the end of it, I was like, I have not engaged in as much woo-hooing or mutual complimenting of outfits since my sorority days.
Mm-hmm.
It really did feel like it felt like a sorority meeting.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah.
Like just the eruptions of like woohoo. Like I was like, oh yeah, that's the white girl woohoo. I know that.
Yeah.
And I'll join right in, you know. But yeah, that was very, it had that feeling. It was very, people weren't angry. It was very like, I called it cheerful anger.
Mm-hmm.
It was very, very cheerful.
DC was pretty diverse. Pretty like, not like, oh wow, look at this diversity, but like, it was pretty diverse. I had something I was going to say about DC. Hold on, let me find it. Girls cheering Trump. Word association. Washington, DC. I'm trying so hard.
That was like, but that whole idea of like intersectionality and diversity was a big component to the criticisms of it all.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And it was one of those things before reading any criticism of it that I noticed myself. And you know, I was looking around like, I was like, why is this all white people? What's going on? Because it didn't reflect what my city looks like. That's not how New York looks. New York doesn't look all white.
I think it's something inherent to the mainstream feminist movement.
I think so too.
There's a problem that people talk about a lot.
I remembered what I wanted to say. And I think this could directly speak to also the diversity issue is that when I did the intro to the Women's March episode, I made a point of saying that there was probably a lot of people who weren't able to be there because it's not safe for them to stand up for themselves.
Yes.
And I was shocked at the time I was like, that might sound a little bit dramatic. But then I literally heard from so many women who were like, I would have been there, but like, my husband would kill me, like, or, you know, like, it's completely against my family's religious beliefs or whatever. And there was a variety of things like that I heard, which I was like, first of all, I can't believe that I predicted that because I am usually so like rose colored glasses. But secondly, like, that really hit home for me that there's even more of us that are literally just silent, are not even able to say anything. And like, it's crazy to think there's 750,000 people in Los Angeles and 500,000 people in Washington, D.C. I don't know how many there were in New York, but
it was like 400,000.
And probably for all of those people, there's someone who feels the same way but can't say it, or they were forced to vote for Trump because of their husband's financial beliefs or whatever. And it just, that's what really. Because I keep coming back to the question, why did so many white women vote for Trump? And then also, why is it a majority of white women that you also see at these things? Mm-hmm. And it just, I mean, I have to wonder if that is part of it. Like, if it could be a cultural thing to an extent, like, it's not okay to. And that there must be one, and there must be at least, like, one person for every one of us that was vocal that was not vocal, who believes something very similar. That's all I wanted to say. And Ashley, thank you so much for calling. That means the world to me. And we will definitely, if I go back to Washington, D.C., I heard it was so hard to meet up with people that day. I knew so many people in town and I was like fucking bummed. I didn't get to see a lot of great people. But the reality of it was you just couldn't find anyone. You couldn't.
I mean, yeah, that's the thing about the New York one. I don't think we expected it to be as vast as it was. Like, we thought we were going to be much more mobile than we actually were. And so, yeah, it wasn't the kind of thing like when the Pope came to New York, I ran into not one, but two women who I went to college with, like waiting in the line to see the Pope. So I thought it was going to be like that kind of thing. I did run into one person I knew at the march, which was random, like, you know, in this huge sea of people to be like, oh, my God, hi, Josh. Great to see you. But yeah, it was just such a different event. I mean, it was not conducive to mobility.
Yeah. I would love to hear the ambient and like your march for, I mean, the ambient noise in the LA versus DC was so different for me just listening to the audio. Like, I would love to hear what every city sounded like.
Oh.
Because everyone was taking, I mean, in LA, there was lots of like laughing, like there's like, you know, it's like a day out almost for some people, like an activity to go do. Whereas DC, there was such like, it was prideful, but also very like solemn. Okay. And like, it was very like, I mean, it was just like kind of a stoic ass day. Like, and that's
interesting, which New York was not stoic. It was basically like The Wave, but in like oral form.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, it was the funniest thing. There would just be these like rolling waves of woohoo. And then it would just roll back. Like, here it going. It was great.
Yeah. There was definitely, I mean, definitely some of that. But, like, it was, I was just, like, I was really shocked at the difference in just the way people sounded in the background. That, like, was poignant
to
me. That's
so interesting. I hadn't thought of that.
Okay. You guys, that was episode 124 of Please Advise. Jolie, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. This was amazing.
I know. I'm, like, sad you have to leave. And
I'll come back. Oh. I'm gonna be back in LA in a few months, so I'll let you know when I'm here. And, yeah. You know, we can do another.
We have more cleaning questions.
Yeah, I mean, you guys didn't even ask me any cleaning questions.
No, I know.
No, but that's the best thing, right?
All right.
Yeah. No one ever wants my relationship advice.
No.
This was amazing.
I totally want. I need you to help me fix my life, but I also. So I think that you're just, I mean, if you're good at cleaning, you're probably good at a lot of things.
I'm good at a lot of things. I'm not great at a lot of things, too, though. I really am. And we should say that we're going to try to have you come on my show.
Oh, my God. I would love that. Yeah. Well, yeah, let's.
I'm going to make sure for the next couple of weeks, I'm going to make sure to flag the very outrageous questions, because I want you to hear the wildest of all of the questions that I get, because I get wild questions.
That is such an honor. Thank you so much.
I just want to, like, see your face and hear your reaction to some of the questions.
I'll fly,
like,
to New York for that.
It's all the scenarios in which the mess was made that's the wild part. Which is, like, the entire success of my column is because it's the questions that are so good.
How do you clean skin off of a chimney? That was a question that was recently asked in this house after I burnt my face on the chimney.
I cleaned it.
So tell everyone where they can find your book, where they can find your column, they can
hear your podcast.
Yes. Pod, yes, your pod.
I'm a multi-platform lady now. You can find my column, Ask a Clean Person, on Esquire.com. I also write a weekly advice column for Racked National called Out Damned Spot. Mm-hmm. So if you are a lady and you have fashion or beauty messes that you need cleaned up, ask me. That's the Rack column. I also am the host of a podcast also called Ask a Clean Person. You can find that on iTunes, Stitcher, Acast, any place where you're getting your podcast, you can find Ask a Clean Person. And you can find me on Twitter and Insta at Jolie Care, JOLIEKERR. You remember that it's pronounced care because I care.
Aww. Girl, thank you so much for coming on. And let's get a drink or something. You leave on Tuesday?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We've got much more to
drink or something on
How
Monday.
Have we never met?
I don't know. I mean,
I don't go to New York. You've been in my orbit for it's not like you were a new name for me. I was like,
same. Oh. No, I am. Yeah. You know, it's weird because I feel like I'm fine. It's good that I'm meeting some of the people that I'm meeting now, because throughout my 20s, I was a disaster human, and I literally regret about 99% of my human interactions from that stage of my life. So whenever I meet someone now that's been on my radar for a long time, I'm thrilled that they're meeting me now, as opposed to when I was wearing
2008 you.
Yeah, like a shower curtain or something out of the house.
The 2008 me was a lot of fun, but maybe not the nicest.
It's hard to be nice when you're I was just a
slut and a drunk.
Same.
There's nothing wrong with that, but I was sort of a disaster to be around. Yeah, I was a disaster.
You're talking about Molly or you?
Me. Oh. Yeah. Back in the Tumblr days.
True. I don't think I mean,
they were like, you know, there were like questionable photos of me in lingerie on Tumblr. And
totally.
Yeah,
we've all been there.
It was bad. I'm glad you're meeting this version
a
of me.
A slut and a drunk. So true. Okay. Well, and a huge pothead. Still a pothead.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for being here. I will talk to you guys next week. Bye.